Faccia, faccia, gattinia, gugia, deal the bit. Le Misha, Brendan, O'Davnia, and Shotty Highland Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody, to your North West roundup of GAA. I want to thank Michaela for the news. Of course, the excellent Joe Dex for the Power Plus. You love a bit of scooter, you, sir? That was a bit of scooter, fella. Joe Dex, of course, producer, DJ, technical wizard. I should have a wee applause button for you for this part, Joe. I need a wee applause button. Listen, Joe's producing the show this evening and keeping me right as ever. We're going to talk all things Donegal Mayo, the All-Ireland series, and we're going to look across the groups and the potential next opponents for Donegal. And if everything goes right at the weekend, and there is a scenario where it might not, but we're thinking it will in some shape or form. We're going to be second or third. And I'm going to shoot the breeze with former Donegal midfielder and Niamh Connell Colossus, the star himself, John Gilday. I'll also be speaking to another formidable character, Gordon Mannin of the Irish Times. We're going to shoot across, I say, all the permutations from the weekend's football and see what's coming down the tracks. Then we're going to have a special Men in the Middle segment with two of our best from the county, Enda McFeely and Mark Dorian. I'm interested to see how the rules are bedding in. I suppose the difference with the lads there between club and county matches so far. So I'm interested to get their opinions on that. I hope you are too. It should be an interesting segment. But I say, first up, we're going to speak with a couple of men here. Number 8, lining out John Gilday. Number 9, Gordon Mannin. That's our midfield partnership tonight. How are you, lads?
Hey, Brendan. How are things?
You doing all right?
Doing great, thanks for yourself.
We have one voice there, anyway. We'll see if we get another one. John must be just coming in. He's probably getting warmed up there. Gordon, would that have been your position, midfield?
Certainly not midfield. No.
You were a giant in other ways.
Sorry?
You were a giant in other ways.
Yeah. No, height was never my strong point.
Hey, what's your club, Gordon?
Gael Colum Kill in Kells in Meath.
Oh, very good, very good. The Meath resurgence, then you're all getting a bit excited up there. Is it happening? Is it true?
It's true. They're building nicely. To be fair, it's been a positive year no matter what happens, because beating Dublin was a huge monkey off the back, because that was like a dark cloud hanging over the county, and it was almost like Meath football couldn't move on until they finally kind of rid themselves of the oppression of Dublin. So that victory alone, I think, has helped the county. And I was down home actually a few weeks ago and I couldn't get over the amount of flags there. So I think the county were just waiting for a team to get behind. But they're making progress, but they're not there yet.
Oh, yeah, I was chatting to Graham Gurley one day and he was just talking about the buzz about, and I was chatting to somebody went down to a sports shop in Navan there and jerseys were sold out. Still, like the bit of buzz was back after that Dublin victory. And of course, after, you know, losing the two coaches and that, there was this thing of just when they looked like they had a very good management team together with Robbie and the two lads and the rest of his backroom team, did it look like you shot yourself in the foot a bit? But yet, there does seem to be, like, a definitely uplift with the team this year.
Mm. And they got kind of lucky after that whole thing with the management team that they were playing Carlo in the first round of Leinster, and Carlo had lost their manager as well. So they were in a bit of disarray, and that kind of allowed me to get back on track. They got a good win there, and then the Dublin victory kind of changed everything. But yeah, no, look, they're a big team. Actually, they're quite a physical team, Mead. It's been a year of progress. Hopefully they can get into the quarterfinals. Will be a huge thing if we got to quarterfinals for them, and then go again next year and try and get promotion in the league. But it's good to see finally a bit of hope in the county, because for a long time there's just been none, and you could see a bit of indifference in people down home about following the county team, and now suddenly there's a team to follow, the flags are back up, and it's good to see.
Yeah, great to see. Listen, you know, from players, people like me and GAA supporters, you know, that growing up just watching those brilliant Meath teams, like you just look at Leinster and you just know, Gordon, it needs a strong Meath in there. You know, it's just part of the culture of it, and without it, Dublin are running amok. And I'm not surprised if you eventually eventually ended that run, but as you said, you got to build on it. And I suppose sitting now with that victory over Cork and sitting on 3 points, you're in a prominent position there. People found it hard after Kerry to call your group, so you must be happy enough that you're sitting in that position at this stage. And again, that's that progress we're talking about.
Yeah, and it's a free hit for them against Kerry because so Kerry will be expected to win that game, but Meath are assured of a place in the knockout stages anyway. No pressure on them, and a bit of momentum after recent games. You know, it's a free hit for them. It's been a good season, as I say. But everything goes back to Colm O'Rourke got a lot of stick actually. One of his first interviews, he said that Meath football are judged on basically beating Dublin, and that's our standard bearer. We know then what happens next. And he got a bit of stick saying that he was looking too far ahead, but like, it's just the truth. Like down in Meath, like they, it's all about beating Dublin, and you can't, as a county, you can't move on until you beat Dublin, and they've done that now. And I think they'll kind of make progress and they can go on. They obviously didn't get the job done and win the Leinster title, which would have been the real kind of carrot at the end of it all. But I don't think all is lost. I think that, Loud kind of were due their turn as well, and it was on the day as well, they were the better team. But I don't think Meath lost a huge lot amount in it. I think that victory over Dublin has set them up, and signs on, they've kind of built on that with a win over Cork and a draw against Roscommon. So it's been a year of progress.
Yeah, magic. John, have you joined us, John Gilday?
I have. Apologies, Brendan. Hey, I forgot all about you.
Don't you? No, that's a bit of an answer. John, do you know what? I thought to myself, maybe Sean Riley was rubbing you in the treatment table. You always liked a bit of that.
Unfortunately, I would need more than Sean Riley at this point in my life. I think I would need a full team of surgeons. But anyway, that's a whole other story and another show at a later date.
John, I'm going to open up with this one. If you can explain to me, you know, I was up at Healy Park 2 months ago now watching Tyrone easily beat Cavan. And then I'm looking at a couple of games in. You have obviously the Mayo defeat to Cavan. You've Tyrone beating Donegal, and then you've Mayo beating Tyrone. Can you put them into context about what we're seeing here this year in Championship? Because to figure it all out, it's a near impossibility in terms of form of teams. What are you putting that down to?
I think it's proven very difficult for the provincial champions to come out fresh. And you know, they've struggled, like three out of the four lost in their first round. So that was point number one. I think when you won a provincial title, there's a huge physical demand to that. And then there's also an emotional release because there seems to be like an end. There's an end line. That was the goal, particularly from a Donegal point of view and from a Louth point of view, and to a lesser extent, Galway. So then it's very hard to get things up and running again. And if you look at it, and we'll have our Donegal hat on here right now, they had to come through four hard games to win an Ulster title, and then they had to go straight into a very, very difficult task where they were playing their neighbours straight out the gate, and Tyrone had been sitting in the long grass for 4 weeks. So it was ideally set up, and then add in the injuries, which was a culmination of all the hard games, and then you were there for a banana skin. I suppose the big conundrum would have been from a Mayo perspective. Like, nobody's seen Cavan, given the way they've been playing, to go down into Mayo and beat Mayo. They were completely flat. Again, I think they put a lot of effort and a huge emphasis on winning the Connacht title, and they fell short. And then they just didn't raise their game, and Cavan got at them, and the longer Cavan were in the game, the more confident they became. And they got turned over, and depending on how results go at the weekend, it could be a very, very costly defeat because, you know, ultimately Mayo have to win this game. All things being equal, you'd expect Tyrone to beat Cavan. Unless there's a huge turnaround in the last couple of weeks, and obviously Donegal can't top the group if Tyrone won it anyway. So it's been a good, that group has been particularly good because the group of death has kind of maybe gone to form to a certain extent, in the sense that Armagh are out front, they have their job done, and then it was a shootout between the other two. But our group, with all four teams particularly on 2 points, with everybody going into something to play for, is very very good from a championship point of view, and very good for a spectator point of view, and leads to a very exciting last weekend.
Everybody has something to play for, indeed. John, Gordon, what have you made of that, about that, where teams are at in terms of championship up and down it? You know, I looked at Mayo and Tyrone, and as John was saying there, Tyrone were fighting, or Mayo were fighting for their lives at that point, and they were smarting from the Cavan defeat and McStay, you know, and so I'd imagine the dressing room was buzzing. So Mayo were playing Championship, Tyrone weren't. Would that be a fair enough assumption of that game? Because Tyrone knew, we've Cavan last, we've beaten Donegal, we're in control.
Yeah, no, I think so. Like, I agree what John says. Like, the provincial finalists have kind of found it hard, but I just think in general it's been difficult to get a kind of a read on teams with the new rules in play as well. And just analysing teams, especially earlier on in the league, was a bit of a fool's errand because you were just getting different performances and different levels of performances from different teams at different times in the league. And it's continued a little bit in the Championship. Now, what I will say is that the Donegal, I was at the Ulster final that day in Clonus, and of all the games I've been at this year, it was without doubt the game played with the most intensity, and the standard of it was exceptional. On a hot day in Clonus, it was an exceptional game of football, played a really high standard, high intensity, high tackle rates, all the kind of stuff you'd expect in Championship football. The next day, the Leinster final, the atmosphere was brilliant below in Croke Park for Meath and Louth, but it was a completely different game of football. Mm. The intensity wasn't the same, the level of aggression, the speed of the game wasn't the same. So reading teams from game to game, it might be difficult, but if you look at the standard and level that Donegal and Armagh got to that day, like I put that well ahead of a lot of games, most games I've seen this year in Championship or League. So like if Donegal can replicate that kind of standard or get to that level again, I mean, that's why, you know, both Donegal and Armagh have been talked about as, you know, some of the All-Ireland favourites.
Yeah, listen, that intensity, John, is that what we're looking at in terms of Donegal? Obviously weren't at that level against Tyrone. They were particularly second half against Cavan. And does that intensity not come in, John, unless it's on the line? Are we trying to play Championship games all the time? Obviously, the format's going to change, but is it not more that we can't expect teams to hit Championship pace unless it is all on the line? That's why you've seen the best of Donegal and Ulster, and maybe the drop then against Tyrone.
Yeah, I think it's physically and mentally, it's impossible to be at that Ulster Championship final pitch every game. I think it's a very, very big ask because, you know, ultimately, Donegal didn't have an easy passage to the Ulster final. Every game was in the melting point going down the straight, so they had to dig into the reserves a lot. You know, Derry were hanging around, Monaghan hung around. It wasn't an easy cruise into an Ulster final, and then you had that obviously epic extra time finale in Clonus. And I always expected a little bit of a drop. I think maybe what I was hoping was because it was Tyrone, and obviously there's a lot of love between both counties, you'd expect maybe that they would have lifted it a wee bit more. But ultimately, it didn't happen for them. And some days that, listen, the reality is some days that happens. A couple of things went wrong. Tyrone were at the pitch because they were the pitch of the game because they were fresh. They came into Balbuffet to make a statement because they hadn't beaten Donegal there under Jim. So there's a lot of things working against us. But I do think, you know, we're coming to the crunch level right now. Any team that's in the Championship after next Saturday night, you can't afford to have an off day. You can't even afford to have an off half because you'll be out of the game. And Galway are obviously seeing that in a big way. They're under serious pressure and they haven't performed since they won the Connacht. I suppose the team that stands out for me that has taken a step forward during this period of time would be Armagh. They look very accomplished, and it'll be interesting to see how they set up against Galway and what their attitude is, with a view that maybe they want to get rid of Galway early if they can. And the other big unknown is Kerry. Because ultimately, and with all due respect to everybody that Kerry's played so far, they haven't had a challenge. You know, they had the scare with Cork probably in the first round of the Munster Championship. But we don't know what Kerry team's going to turn up. We don't know how battle-hardened they are. The flip side of that is maybe they're going to be very fresh. So we're coming into real Championship football from Saturday night on. And then every game after that is ultimately a final, and there's no second chances. There's no second chance saloon, and you would suspect that the top four or five teams in the country, the Galways, the Dublin, the Armagh, the Kerry, the Donegal, will be thereabouts. And don't forget, you have Tyrone lurking in the background. And as they proved against Donegal, when they get to the pitch of the game, they're a match for anybody. So, you know, it's anybody's game right now, which is great. You know, gone are the days when it was just, you know, it was if somebody could catch Dublin on a day, then everybody else had a chance. Right now, there's five or six teams there that can have a very realistic and genuine expectation that they're going to an All-Ireland final. And if things go the way, they could win an All-Ireland. So that leads to very, very exciting games. And they're, you know, the quarterfinals and the semifinals will be epic, to say the least, because nothing can be left for chance.
Yeah, for sure. And with a Meath man on the other side, he's happy enough about this Dublin dominance. Stop. Maybe he's that scared at this stage. It doesn't matter. But John's mentioned the teams there, Gordon. And you know, we do this every year, don't we, in the league? We get excited by a team and are like, wow, they're the team. Like, Galway was one of those teams, particularly early on. We're like looking, going, who's going to beat them this year? And now, trying to measure them up in terms of where they're at. And John's mentioned some of the teams there and agree very much in terms of the driving force, Armagh. The intensity you talked about in the Ulster final, probably much Donegal and Armagh don't like each other as well. But just one small point, just as we get into the crunches of these, before we get into Donegal and Mayo specifically, is that Armagh are sitting pretty, and we all know about rest and periods and timing it, right? So really they're top of the group because they've a head-to-head with Dublin, even if Dublin beat Derry. So if they don't go flat out, they actually could change the trajectory of that group in terms of Galway beating them. Is that one level, I suppose, in here? It's one small wee bit that people maybe won't account for, that Galway could win this match and find themselves in the position that if Armagh needed to win, they wouldn't win, you know, that kind of way. And really, you know, there's a potential there for the likes of a Derry to maybe sneak through, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, it'd be interesting to see what team Armagh put out, but, like, even if, like, if they don't roll out the kind of 15 that lined out the last day, which you wouldn't expect them to, like, the guys who are bringing in, like their panel is so deep, and you can, like, you would have known yourself, you guys would have known better than I would even, like, that if you're kind of scrambling for a position on a county team and you feel you're not getting a chance and suddenly you're given this opportunity, like, this is your All Ireland final, your chance to prove that you deserve a place in the starting 15 for the All-Ireland quarterfinals. So if Kieran McGeaney gives chances to guys this weekend who haven't been getting game time, like, that's a dangerous enough proposition as well for Galway. Like, it's not the fact that he mightn't be putting out the 15 to start it and to beat the Dubs. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is going to be an easier game for Galway. It could end up being quite a tricky assignment, because if you've lads who are going to fight tooth and nail to try and get a jersey for the next day out, this is their chance.
Yeah, and on that, Gordon, I think Armagh have probably one of the deepest squads in the country because, you know, like that Ulster final you talked about, they had maybe seven new starters, but the seven that were playing and they were still all there, they were in the squad. So they have a serious depth. So listen, Kerry's Lord in that group, Meath on 3, Kerry on 4, Roscommon 1, and Down and Monaghan dominating that group, Down and Monaghan on 4. They play this weekend, Louth and Clare on 0. Obviously, our group, we're all sitting on 2, Armagh on 4, Dublin, Galway on 1, and Derry on 1. So the scenarios is there, should Donegal win or lose, you're looking at the likes of, you know, playing either a Monaghan or a Down, the likes of, you know, you're looking at the likes of a Dublin or a Galway, you might think. And from the other group, it's anybody's guess. From the three of them are still Kane in the mix, but you're looking at a Meath or Roscommon. So, you know, a lot of tricky ties in there. And it's hard to know, actually, John, whether it's better to finish. You know, you always think better to finish second. You should get a lesser team, but it's not really the case this time. It's hard to know what way the draw will fall. Yeah. It could still fall against you should you beat Mayo. But listen, you have to go and win the game.
Yeah, to be honest, at this point in time, second or third, given the way the groups are panned out, is really irrelevant to a certain extent. I suppose if you were looking at it from a very practical point of view, I suppose group one and group four will be looking to avoid one another. Like, the runners-up of the Armagh group would like to stay away from Donegal or Tyrone, or, you know, Donegal or Cavan, whoever it might be, and Donegal would obviously prefer maybe to play somebody in the... Not so much that you want to be disrespectful, they would be classified as weaker groups, but, you know, it would be much more palatable from a Donegal perspective to play a Down than maybe it would be to play Galway or Dublin, for example.
It'll be Down or Louth, you would imagine, from that group, John.
I think that'll be better than that. So, and then that's the preliminary quarterfinal, and then you go to the quarterfinals, and then obviously you're looking at... We can't, if Donegal do succeed, and let's say they get through via Mayo and they get a good enough draw and they won that, we can't play the Armagh group in a quarterfinal because you can't play the team that you played in the provincial final. Yeah. I don't think then you can, if let's say Tyrone come through as top of our group, you can't play them because you're within reason, because you're not supposed to play a team that you played in your group. So ultimately then we end up in a quarterfinal facing either the winners of the Kerry group or the winners of the Mona and Down group. Yeah. That's the way it's kind of scheduled to roll out. But there's a lot of football to be played between now and then. I think ultimately this game is far more important from a Mayo perspective, because if Mayo lose, they're out.
Yes.
Because they're head-to-head with Cavan, as Cavan already have the head-to-head. So it's a huge, huge game from a Mayo point of view. Whereas we may get lucky enough, whether we come out second or third, it probably won't make any difference. As long as Tyrone, our good neighbours, do a favour and make sure they beat Cavan. And if Cavan should beat Tyrone, then all hell breaks loose. Yeah. Nobody knows, you know, God knows what's going to happen.
Well, that hasn't happened since 1948. It's stretching back 13 games now. The Cavan men certainly have a problem beating these Tyrone boys in championship, but you never know, John. By the way this season's been, you just wouldn't know. And listen, talk about records, you know, since 2012, Gordon, we Donegal have a terrible record against Mayo. I think there might have been one draw in there. I don't know, was there one victory? I didn't even probably look. I know that it's been...
They put us down in a league game after the All-Ireland.
And was that a draw too, was it?
They kicked a score with the last kick of the game to relegate Donegal. Donegal, over the last 10, 12 years, have an abysmal record against Mayo. Yeah, and Mayo have given us a couple of hidings along the way as well. So outside the 2012 final, Mayo is definitely not a team that's been a happy hunting ground for us.
Yeah. Gordon, do you think that matters, that record now coming into this that Mayo have had over Donegal? Probably using their physical power, that very strong Mayo team, who was, listen, the second best team in Ireland, throughout them years, you know, is that an issue going in? It's in the hide as well. It's definitely a ground that would suit them better. Do you think the record has anything to do, or is this now a Jim McGuinness team that needs to win? I know what John's saying, the needs are more desperate by Mayo, but I think Donegal are looking at this in terms of, right, if we are going to go all the way this year, this is the type of game we need to win. Like, Donegal can't go on, I think, off the back of being beat by Tyrone and Mayo and think, right, we're going to get it together now and win the All-Ireland. So I think both teams have a big need in this. I know Mayo's is probably more critical, but I think that Donegal dressing room will be very much completely focused in a similar way.
Yeah, I don't think the past kind of matters really in this context, because as you said, this is Jim's new team now, and I don't think what happened in the last kind of 10 years or more kind of has much relevance. The teams have changed a lot. But when you measure up the sides this weekend as well, they're both coming in different kind of trajectories. At the end of the Connacht final, Mayo looked absolutely shattered. It looked like they'd put their entire year into winning the Connacht this year, and they came up short against Galway and obviously couldn't lift it then for Cavan. They had a bounce back against the head against Tyrone last time out. But where exactly is their form line like? And you know, if you take out that Tyrone game, the form line hasn't really been great. And even looking at got to the league final, obviously, but they were the lowest scoring team in Division 1, and actually between Division 1 and Division 2, they were the lowest scoring team. Like Donegal, looking at the group, have scored a total of 55 points in this group, and Mayo have scored 40. So, like, that age-old problem, and I know Mayo people get fed up with it, being told it, but up front, up top, like that lack of penetration and that kind of X factor forward, like they just haven't had enough of them to get over the line and to win the Ireland when they had those super teams. And it's still a problem. It's still an Achilles heel for them. And the Tyrone game for Donegal is an outlier as regards they had 5 scores that day for Donegal against Tyrone. And apart from that, I was looking at 11 different scores against Derry, 9 against Monaghan, 10 against Down, 12 against Armagh, 12 against Cavan last time out. Donegal have been getting a good spread of scores apart from that Tyrone match, which is a bit of an outlier.
Yeah, a bit of an outlier. John, is that just, as we spoke at the start of the show, I mean, if you look at Tyrone the last day themselves, you know, McCurry got 2 points, Bradley didn't score, Canavan actually had a bit of form, but none of the other forwards scored. But for Mayo, and it's an interesting point there, that spread of scores, you know, 5 of the 6 Mayo starting forwards all scored, you know, Paddy Durgan back hitting 3 points. There was a wee bit of kick again with Mayo, or is it a matter just of our own injuries, John? You know, the likes of, you know, potentially a McGee back in the squad, of course, Keelan McGonigal. Patton is the big one. He's done the warm-up the last couple of days. How ready is he to come back into that fray to take Mayo on? And, you know, whether that would be the swinging point in it, having those players ready, John?
Yeah, and you know, Gordon's right. If you looked at the form guy, apart from the, ironically, the 2 Tyrone games for both teams, form would suggest that Donegal would be the favourites going into this. And even, you know, even the Tyrone game, even though, you know, we lost the game, the game was there for Donegal to win with 2 minutes to go, or you know, the game was in the melting pot. So they were disappointed, but not able to push on. But maybe in the long run, it doesn't do them any harm because it allows them to reset. And the kickback for the Cavan game was very encouraging in the second half. I suppose the issue you always have with a Mayo team is that it's somewhat schizophrenic in the sense that you don't know what Mayo is going to show up. It's like, you know, you get this Mayo team and they play this mad abandon type football when their back's to the wall and they're all gunslinging and the cornerback's kicking points and everybody's going for it. And it's very hard to deal with that kind of manic madness that they bring to Gaelic football, which is incredibly enjoyable to watch if you're neutral. And they've done it for years against Kerry and Dublin. What I would suggest is that this team doesn't have the calibre of football that previous Mayo teams might have had. They don't have, you know, the quality player and some of their better players. Like Paddy Durkin came back after out a year of injury and he's not getting younger anymore and was man of the match. And they relied on him heavily to drag them through. So you would suspect that Donegal would be a younger, fitter, fresher, more hungry team. And I do agree with you, Brendan, in your comment. This will be something that Jim, I believe, will want Donegal to go at this as if it's the last game of the championship and really tear into it because they want to lay down a marker. And from a confidence perspective, if you're going into the preliminary quarterfinals on the back of a win, they've re-established their credentials apart from the glitch against Tyrone. And it puts them in a much stronger position going forward. So it lends itself to an epic encounter because obviously Mayo, last chance saloon here, they're not going to go out without a fight. Should be very entertaining. But again, all things being equal, if this game had been anywhere else other than Hyde Park, I would be comfortable and confident of a Donegal one. I just think going to the Hyde is never easy. You're playing in Mayo's backyard. It's a big, heavy pitch. Weekend weather's not going to be good. It's not conducive maybe to that Donegal style of football, which is very fast-paced and kicking a lot of scores. So it's very much a 50-50, but hopefully we'll come out the right side of it.
Yeah, fixture committee, I've got a bit to answer for there, maybe. Gordon, just on that, you know, Donegal's played a deep running, you know, particularly like Samogan and Murr, you know, coming from deep, the way Donegal break the lines coming forward, the amount of maybe dangerous people they have, you know, the form, particularly if Shane O'Donnell, the ball carrying capabilities, of course, Murphy, you know, I think him and Donal McHugh will have a great battle at the weekend in terms of, you know, man on man there. But, you know, they're half back line dealing with Donegal's half forward line, and as you were saying, once them scores start to flow, there is that variation. Now, you're obviously looking at, you know, the McCall and Ryan O'Donoghue having a great battle. Is there something maybe in Donegal that Frank Irwin's obviously a midfielder converted to full forward, O'Shea has had good form, would you think that there's a danger, maybe there's one area of Donegal's defence, maybe height wise, that Mayo might try and do something direct? But outside of that there, you know, their forward line to me is very one-dimensional. And I think Donegal hitting them on the break could work well, but the wreck balling might be one feature they could work off.
Yeah, no, I wasn't at the game, but I was talking to a few people who were at the Mayo Tyrone match. And as John said, like, Paddy Durkin got mad at the match, but by all accounts, Aidan O'Shea was immense for Mayo. And he's kind of hit a bit of form there. So where will they play him? Will they use him inside or what will they do? Going back again to John's point about Mayo football and that kind of abandon they played with for years. One of the criticisms during Kevin McStay's time was they weren't playing it. They were playing a bit more of a less chaotic and more pre-planned, organised game. And it maybe wasn't suiting them. And in the last game against Tyrone, they kind of went back to the, I suppose, what has suited them, that traditional deep runners coming from the half back line. Paddy Durkin's return was obviously important in that. So I think we'll see Mayo again going for abandon and playing that chaos football and trying to kind of take the game to Donegal. I'm just not sure they have the forwards like this. I'm not sure they're going to have the firepower for it. And especially when you see and kind of put out the fires, then that. Donegal have so many options for the scores are coming from, whether they're running from deep or whether they can get the ball into Murphy, who was immense against Cav in the last day, brilliant in the Ulster final as well. I think, like, when you see Oisin Gallen coming off the bench and scoring 3 points, obviously that's if you're Jim McGuinness, you're delighted to see that kind of stuff. You know, that's really making it difficult for team selections and players coming in. Brennan as well can score the point when he come off the bench. So I think I think Jim McGuinness has a lot of options. I do think you mentioned one man there. I think he's going to be key to the All Ireland, maybe not this weekend, but the All Ireland is going to be the return of Sean Patton, and if he's well, you know, because if like if Murphy is the nail, Patton is the hammer. I think like he's so important to what he brings to that Donegal team, and I think they'll need him back fit and kind of for the latter stage of the championship if they're going to end up in Croke Park at the end of July.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. Listen, Gordon, we know who me and John are going for. Do you want to tell us your truth in this one? Tell us who's going to win this match.
Yeah, I think Donegal and Tyrone will win the games in Group One, so we'll end up with Tyrone top of the group. And look, that will be a bit of I do think the four tabletopping teams it's a huge carrot. Like to get that break week, it means like for Donegal to finish second or third here, they're gonna end up with 3 weeks in a row after coming through probably the hardest provincial championship run. And you just kind of, from a depth and panel point of view and injuries, you're just kind of hoping that doesn't affect them for then the All-Ireland quarterfinals. But finishing first is kind of, without a doubt, a huge prize for any team that can get that.
Good man. If I hear you in any Mayo podcast and saying I think Mayo's going to want it, I'm going to be listening out. Gordon, listen, thanks Amal, Gordon Manning there of the Irish Times. Gordon, thanks so much for joining us even. John Gilday. John, you're always worth waiting for, my man. So
I'll give just you a week. Maybe next time send me a text before the show starts rather than 10 minutes into the show.
You were having a big baked Alaska after dinner there. You had to get it finished. Hey, I hear you.
I won't tell you what I was doing because it wouldn't be fit the radio, but we can have a conversation about
it. We'll have a chat later on. He goes, you're my neighbour now, John Gilday. Listen, John, thanks so much again. And Gordon, thanks, lads.
Thanks,
I'll catch you down the tracks.
Hey, Gordon. Bye-bye.
See you, John. Bye.
Jude, great chatting to the lads here. Say, coming up after the break, we're going to talk to two of the men in the middle. Enda McFeely and Mark Dorian straight after these break. Yes, folks, welcome back to the DL Debate here. We're going to continue the show with two of our top officials, Enda McFeely and Mark Dorian. Are you there, lads?
Here, Brendan.
Lads.
Here, Brendan, yeah.
Good on you. Blow a whistle there if you're ready. That's normally how you signal what to do. I'm sure the whistles are put away in the house. I have a couple of wee ones there when I was coaching the team unions last year. If they could hold them whistles, boys, I'll tell you what, it's a racket and a half. But you boys are well used to it, lads. Do you know what was interesting? I'll start with you, Mark, just about how the rules are bedding in, because I was speaking actually to Greg earlier and we were talking about, you know, the six or seven rule enhancements, but it was like 47 or something technicalities on your side. So how's it all been bedding in so far this season, and what's been your reaction to it?
It's bedding in well so far. A few teething issues at the start and probably a few issues coming up, you know, different weeks like. But all in all, I actually think that they're going well at county and club level. So the referees seem to be happy enough with them so far.
Yeah, keep the refs happy. That's number one. And are you noticing much of a difference? Obviously, there's a huge difference in terms of pre-championship, the fact that you're handling club games on your own. But what are you noticing between the two in terms of how people are taking on board the new rules and of course, how you're applying them?
I think, to be honest, they pretty much have been well received everywhere. Obviously, everybody knew that the game needed change. And the short space of time the FRC had, the rules have made a fantastic difference. Even as a refereeing point of view, games are far smoother. Less cards, less confrontations, which relates to a very good, normal, high-scoring game now. I think it'll take a wee while longer for the clubs to adapt maybe to it. At county level, as you say, you're used to your extra officials. It's a wee bit harder at club level, but hopefully, you know, them connections can iron out themselves as we go on, maybe to the championship.
Mm. And Mark, obviously recruitment's a big one, you know, in terms of, if you looked at a lot of potential refs, they're probably put off by the nonsense that was coming from the line and people around, you know, getting irate about decisions. Is this going to be a great recruitment drive for referees now that they know that they ultimately have this respect, and if anybody's out of line, they pay the price? Is this, when we think about it, this should have been done a long time ago.
It definitely should have been done a long time ago, but and it definitely will affect the boys. Will now consider, I'll give it a go, and with the less abuse coming from the sideline, and even from the players themselves, it's enjoyable to referee games, and you know, yes, you hold your hands up when you make a mistake, and you're always going to have that bit of irateness from the sideline at times, you know, if a decision doesn't go their way. But it's not as much anymore, and it's not at everything. So I do think it'll definitely help recruit referees, and it's we need more referees at the minute too.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I think these people that I rate, actually, it's very little to do with the game. That's just an avenue for them to vent. They need to take a look at themselves. I don't think people can get that excited about a referee indecision. I think they just get, they're a wee bit maybe wound up anyway. They need a wee bit of chill out. But that's a different programme to this one, Mark. Leave that to the health and well-being. And when you're out and about then, have you noticed differences in different places you've been? Obviously, you've been officiating games here, there and everywhere. Has everywhere kind of been cotton on there, or have you noticed there's different parts of the country even are taking on the rules that bit different?
No, I think in general, at national level, it doesn't matter whether you're Dublin, Cork, Galway, Leitrim. They're all coached to a certain level. Obviously, there might be a gap in some player quality, but they're still all coached to the rules. They've all embraced it. You still get the odd breach, you know, the odd silly thing, you know. But in general, they've all took the rules quite well. If you talk to players are actually excited to play football now, which wasn't the case for the last, well, since I started refereeing anyway.
Yeah, yeah, magic. That's what we want. There's a man, of course, Mr. Falloon is down to ref our game in the Hyde. Mark, I don't know if you've seen the Ulster Under 20 final. Did you happen to catch that game?
I seen bits and pieces of it, yeah.
Yeah, there was a very contentious one then and now, Mark. I don't want to pick anything apart, but here's what gets me. And when we spoke way back at the start, we were like, right, National League and stuff, and this happens, that happens. But when it decides a big championship game, there could be a bit of problem with a few of the rules. And Donegal were a point up with about, I think there was about maybe 90 seconds left of the game. And there was a couple of tackles went in on Rorty, and he was hit, he was knocked over. It was fairly physical, the tackle that was coming into him. There was a second tackle coming on. So he got up, and then the ref blew the whistle. Now, I thought in my heart that it was overcarrying, but he turned to look at Mr. Falloon, and he straight away, 50 metre, and that equalised the game. And Tyrone, of course, won the game and added time. And I guess the heartbreak of that, Mark, was seeing how easily Tyrone went on to win the All-Ireland. So I guess, is that, Mark, is that just down to you? Like, in that point, what would have been your gut reaction there? Would you blow straight away for someone that turns, I mean a split second here, or would you maybe give the opportunity to say, hand that ball back? Because that is one of the contentious ones. And as I say, if it decides a game, which it pretty much did in this, then the punishment, it can hardly fit the crime.
Yeah, it definitely is one of the more contentious rules out there. And there's probably, every referee is probably applying it differently from national level right down through the clubs and everything else. Like, you give the player, a lot of referees will give the player the opportunity to hand it back. And, you know, even if they turn around and look at you, they're turning around to look at you to find out what's the free for. You mightn't know that it's given against him or if it's his free. And, you know, you have to be understanding as a referee that the players are getting used to these rules as well. And he's not delaying it that much by turning around and looking at you to look for an explanation as to what's it given for. And I think that's the way referees should be doing it, is, you know, bear with them. They're learning as much as we're learning, and not to blow the whistle too quick and be running 50 metres forward.
Yeah, and I know it wouldn't have bothered me that much if it was in another part of the game. And I know that shouldn't matter when it comes to decisions. You should make your decision and that's it. But if that decided this Ulster final, which it did in many ways, I know Donegal still had an opportunity in that time, but they were a point up. I just think that, you know, in those scenarios where you got to say, here, hand them back the ball right away, like almost give them that small bit of wriggle room, but like the halfway line where you're now given a couple of yards just in case to be told to get back. Is that some of the wee finer points maybe in there that we need to tidy up?
Listen, I would say at the end of this year there's going to be a few tweaks. Handing the ball back was a contentious issue whenever the rules were brought out. I think everybody has kind of caught on to it a good bit. But as a refereeing point of view, Brendan, it doesn't matter whether you're 10 seconds into the game or 10 seconds from the end, you have to apply the rule.
I get you.
For instance, like 10 seconds into the game, if we'd have done that, Tyrone got the 50-metre penalty kicked up with the bar, there wouldn't be a word. But because it was the end of the game or whatever, as a contentious decision, where I don't agree it is a contentious decision. Rules are rules. What you realise is there's people, when we go out refereeing, there's people watching us to make sure we apply the rules properly and to try and keep a side in an Ulster final, because, listen, Jesus, very harsh, we better not do that. That doesn't really come under refereeing thinking. We have to apply the rules as we see it. And unfortunately, sometimes it leads to the scenarios that you're referring to there now.
Listen, I get your point about if it was a foul or not, and the ref believed it was a foul. I think because of the circumstances, and I don't forget about the time frame of it, but just that rule in particular, if that rule is administered to its level, it is very, like the punishment that we say about fitting the crime, and I know we might say a rule, but there are refs that wouldn't have did that. So we're under a wee bit of this kind of grey area, and if that grey area stops a team potentially winning in All-Ireland, which probably Donegal could have did, you are into very dangerous territory then in terms of the amount of time that everybody's put into that, and you've been caught, say, in a situation where that mightn't have happened if it was a different referee, or to me it shouldn't have happened anyway. But yeah. I know what you're saying, and if it's cut and thrust rule, I think we're probably in this kind of a getting to know you phase, if you like, be rules in it. That's why I think on those, particularly on those type of 50 metre penalties, there needs to be a wee bit of, maybe a wee bit of common sense attached, I suppose that's what I'm looking at.
Well, funny you say common sense. When I started refereeing, Mark probably tell you the same. We're always told to use common sense. And then when you go to Evanstown or you go to Gervais, they always tell you, name me the page that common sense is written. You know, that's not a rule, Brenton. I know what you're saying is common sense as far as them kind of decisions are concerned, but at the same time, would be up to the player to make sure that he doesn't infringe on the rules, so you don't give the referee that option to punish you, as the way I would look at that.
Yeah, well, I suppose how I would look at that, Mark, it'd be interesting to see your opinion on it. VAR doesn't have common sense, say, in English Premiership or in the Premiership. That cut and thrust, that'll look and see, was there a trip there whatsoever? Oh, yeah, caught his foot. But the referee on the pitch will think, right, that didn't catch his foot enough to be a free. And I think there is the difference between the two. That common sense is human. You know, you got to assess that. And I think that's what you guys do that very well. I just think in those wee things, and again, you know, I don't know, is there going to be any more reviews, and I mentioned there towards the end of the year, just about looking at those small instances in the game, because I think, listen, don't get me wrong, the rules have been brilliant as far as I'm concerned. Just that one in particular, that did gnaw on me a small bit as I watched the Rowan roll through semi-final and final, you know.
Yeah, and look, I suppose it's similar to the Mark rule in midfield as well, the 50-metre penalty if you tackle the opponent straight away. And it's it's probably one of those ones that will be looked at. And as you say, there is referees out there that are playing it differently. And the further you go through the championship, you know, you might see a lax in it a wee bit. It's one of them ones where not every referee is the same. Like myself and Indico, you know, we go out and referee the games to the rules.
Yes.
But, you know, I might talk to a player more than some other referees would, or vice versa, you know, and it's just, I suppose, it's different styles of refereeing, I suppose.
Yes.
Inside of the rules, you know.
Yeah. Listen, I get you. And heading in, of course, we're right in the middle of championship now. What's your feeling heading in the club season then? And do you think again, the rules are going to have massive positive effect here? And listen, you've been refereeing Donegal for so long now, but certainly it will have a brilliant effect in terms of opening up our game a bit, and in terms of, again, the respect for officials. It'll be fantastic to see that. And I think that's very important for the game as a total.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I haven't really done a while at Donegal since the start of the year, because obviously you're away nearly every weekend. But the few games that I have seen, I would like the clubs to embrace it a good bit more, to be honest with you. I'd like the game, hopefully they will embrace it come championship, you know, the fast flowing football. I just think it's going to be, we're heading into a new era and club championship where we have the opportunity to say Donegal games are covered on TV every year. They're covered for a reason. There's good quality players, good quality football. I just hope the clubs embrace all that going forward now into the championship.
And hey, this McFeely man's a wanted man here, Mark. Are you the same? You're all over the country.
Unfortunately.
We export you out, do we? Listen, we should be keeping you here. Never mind that, carry on. What do we get instead of using it?
There's plenty of good quality referees in the county.
Brenton, there's plenty of people wouldn't like to see us coming either, so it's fine.
and tell me, Mark, so see, going into this, is there any change in terms of the officiating for Championship in terms of the same people and your same teams will come in terms of the new rules, and you'll kind of keep that cohesion going into the Championship? There won't be any changes around how the officiating is allocated?
No, that'll all be done by the referees administrator and the CCC, who've been doing it all year, and they'll be looking at how referees have been performing all year. You know, some referees might move from having done intermediate championship up to senior championship this year. And the benefit then at club championship is that the referees going out and have their linesmen and umpires with them, which doesn't happen within the league. So there's that extra support there as well, which allows for, you could say, better refereeing, that you're not worried about looking behind your back to see is there a breach of a 3v3 or is there two boys rolling around the ground, you know. So you have that extra support there, which allows for better refereeing.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, listen, lads, I'm looking forward to it, and looking forward to this Donegal Championships. We know was caught in a wee bit of a stranglehold this last number of years, so I'm looking forward to seeing these new rules. And of course, you two men, we need to keep you at our home base here for our own big games, and I'm looking forward to them as the summer goes on. Keep up the good work, men, and we'll stay in touch.
Thanks, Brenton.
Thank you very much, Brenton.
Hey, anytime. Listen, lads, great to talk. Hey, that's Mark Doyen and Enda McFeely there. We're almost ready to wrap up the show, and I actually have a guest on this evening, the one and only. I've been giving it off about Tyrone there, winning Doster Under 20 Championship.
Yes.
And then the All Ireland.
Yes.
And behind, I have a Tyrone man. And he's got a big show coming up next.
Big show.
He's normally knocking at the window to tell me to come in, but.
That's one of the nicer ways we have putting it. You're good and all right.
Well, listen, you love your football. Like,
I do.
Like Tyrone is a football mad county.
It is, yeah. It certainly is.
And listen, healthy rivalry with ourselves. Like, none of us likes Armagh, but. We can stomach each other, you know.
I don't want to say too much here. I think I'm talking to you without the microphones. I'd leave myself out.
I opened you up a wee bit there. I left you open there. That's not fair.
Did you watch the hurling?
I did, yeah.
That was an unbelievable game.
Do you know what? Fergal Logan, that was speaking to me today, good throw, man. We were having a crack. He was down at the match. I said, isn't that funny? I said to my wife, I said, we must go to the Munster final. Some year to experience that. And he was telling me, I'm way down. Did remember he do a health scare?
That's right.
He said, listen, I'm going to get out. I'm going to get doing things and that. So he was down at it.
He's looking well. I've seen him one day.
He's a house in Downing. She used Tyrone boys love coming into Donegal and soaking up her.
Bring him her money and spend it.
Buy it every good Asda before you came through.
That's what I said in a hotel we were recently be a wedding. Used to band boys, can he pass out?
I find it hard to pass it myself. Tell me, big show coming up tonight.
Every Monday night's a big show.
Hey, so it's the best music show there is, Joe.
We have the Blue Creek Band on tonight, right? Yes. You're going to love them. We also got a fella called Colm Hargan, singer songwriter, and we have from Strabane. We bring in the big guns in, you know what I mean?
The big guns.
You know, yes. Adam Dolan.
And how does that recruitment happen? How do you, is it just the large tentacles of the Monday night session that you know so many people, just line up guests for?
We're booked right into September now.
Yes.
You know, and that's not a word of lie. But a lot of us down to bring envelopes, Lee.
Yes.
You know, the more you give us, the more we'll bring you on.
Yes, yes.
You know, if you ring me and say, Paul, any chance to get on the show next week? I'll say, well, speak to me, Brendan.
Yeah. There's a way of getting yourself on. It is a private conversation.
There'll be no investigation under my fraud. It'll be straight up. No issues at all.
So it's really the Paul McDavid show, and then Jimmy helps you out a wee bit, is that?
Jimmy's away at the minute, as you can see.
That's why I'm slagging him.
We have Trudy on today.
You know, Trudy's in. She's a great.
And the crutches too.
Yeah. Soldiering on. Did you do that in the hen night or what? Irish dancing. Did you? Oh.
No. But I know, we're busy. It's busy. The Monday night sessions are busy. Right. We really are. And we're delighted to, you know, look at the quality of acts we have down here.
Hey, I listen every Monday when I go back.
It's unreal.
Nice,
and we're very, very lucky. We're just the front foot, you know what I mean, and that's it. And as I say, if anybody wants to get, and the music, yeah, man, will tell you, I've seen the music all the time, Joe. Yeah. You know, the quality of the music is coming our way. It's just, and unfortunately, sometimes on a Monday night, you don't get a chance to play it. That's why Jimmy comes on a Thursday night, you know.
That's it. This man was the book scooter. That's his. That's
I heard him here earlier. That's just why he's full time. He'll be doing the butcheries next. Good luck.
Listen, thanks so much. That's great. Chatty Paul McDevitt. Stay tuned for the excellent Monday night sessions. I'll be speaking to you next week as we round up the big game, Mayo against Donegal. Thanks to Head of Sport, Oisin Kelly. I'll speak to you next week.